court. We'll proceed to the third case. Jay versus Aramark Business. Mr. Rico.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jim Derrico on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Ms. Lola Ajayi. In this case, there are several reasons why this court should reverse the lower court's grant of summary judgment in favor of Aramark and against Ms. Ajayi. We begin with Ms. Ajayi's retaliatory discharge claim. As this court has noted in Collier v. Budd, a plaintiff's employee need only cast sufficient doubt on the employer's alleged reasons for the adverse employment action to preclude summary judgment. In this case, there is an abundance of evidence to cast doubt on Aramark's actions. In February 2000, Mr. Jahi filed a charge with the EEOC. On April 26, 2000, the EEOC dismissed Mr. Jahi's charge for lack of sufficient evidence, the inability to make a determination one way or the other. On April 28, Aramark, and specifically Mr. Greg Kaminsky, Aramark manager, admits that he became aware of the dismissal of Ms. Ajayi's charge. A mere 4 days later, on May 2nd, Mr. Kaminsky instructed his subordinate, Mr. Tim Jaros, to write up Ms. Ajayi for an alleged customer complaint, suspend her for 3 days, and demote her to cashier. Mr. Kaminsky also told his subordinate to get the memo from Mr. Mullen, the Harris Bank client contact person on the Aramark account, and give it to Mr. Jahi along with the write-up. However, Mr. Jaros could not find neither Ms. Ajayi nor Mr. Mullen. On May 11th, Mr. Kaminsky sent Ms. Ajayi a letter stating that unless she returned to work by the 17th, Aramark would consider her job abandoned. The letter makes no reference or mention of a supposed unapproved vacation. On May 17th, as noted in her vacation request form, and in accordance with Mr. Kaminsky's letter, Ms. Ajayi did return to work. Around noon that day, she met with Kaminsky. During that meeting, Kaminsky stated, "Oh, you left. Is it because the EEOC did not find anything? That's why you ran out of here?" He then stated, "Are you going to stand there and act like you don't know that you sued me?" During that same meeting, he gave Ms. Ajayi the May 2nd write-up and suspended her for 3 days. Mr. Jahi explained that she had been on vacation and that she took the time off for medical reasons. During that meeting, he also demanded that she bring a doctor's note upon her return after the suspension. The May 2nd write-up that he gave her on May 17th referenced an attached memo regarding these alleged customer complaints. However, the attached memo, not only did it not exist on May 2nd, it didn't even exist on May 17th at the time that it was given to Ms. Ajayi. If you look at that exhibit was an email that was prepared at 4:35 p.m. Mr. Mullen even testifies that he prepared that memo at that time. And Mr. Kaminsky and Ms. Ajayi both state that this meeting occurred around noon. So the truth of the matter, the memo did not exist, or the email did not exist, when Ms. Ajayi was given the write-up. On May 20th, after the three-day suspension, Ms. Ajayi again returned to work, and she gave Mr. Kaminsky the note from her doctor. However, she was still immediately fired by Mr. Kaminsky. The district court noted the timing alone is suspicious enough to support an inference of causation here. In actuality, the timing is so suspicious, it is enough to preclude summary judgment. However, in addition to the suspicious timing, there's even more evidence to undermine Aramark's claims. Aramark routinely ignored customer complaints, including those of Mullen. Even the district court stated that if there was evidence that Aramark ignored customer complaints, summary judgment would not be proper. However, the court mistakenly went on to ignore this evidence. Aramark routinely ignored customer complaints until it served their retaliatory purpose. There was nothing done about Mullen's alleged complaints. In his memo, he states that he had set forth several complaints. However, there's absolutely nothing in the record to indicate that Aramark did anything whatsoever about any of those complaints. They weren't mentioned to Mr. Jahi. There's no written documentation that complaints occurred. There was no verbal warning, no written warning, nothing. There's no evidence of these complaints or that Aramark did anything about them. Additionally, Mr. Jahi testified, and as we know, that must be believed for purposes of this appeal. She testified that there was one customer who was so upset about a failure of Aramark to do anything about the negative comments that she put into the suggestion box that she asked for the name and number of the Aramark headquarters. Excuse me. Additionally, the very employee that we contend that Aramark discriminated in favor of Mr. Jahi, Ms. Lourdes Lopez, numerous customers at the Harris Bank cafeteria filled the comment box with negative comments about Ms. Lourdes Lopez. However, Mr. Romero Lopez, no relation, actually would destroy those complaints when he got them. Just further evidence that Aramark routinely ignored customer complaints until it served their retaliatory purpose. As a matter of fact, when Ms. Ajahi was transferred down to the 311 cafeteria from the cafeteria of 111 West Monroe, she was commented that they were doing this because it was supposed to be a promotion, or she perceived it as one, that they were doing this because one of the reasons was her ability to work with her ability to work well with customers. Aramark makes the contention that this is just Ms. Ajahi's own perception of her performance. But however, these statements came from the Aramark managers. They didn't come from Ms. Ajahi. The destruction of the comment cards, the failure to do anything about Mr. Mullen's alleged prior complaints, clearly provide enough evidence for a reasonable jury to find that Aramark's firing of Mr. Jahi for these alleged complaints was retaliatory.
Mr. DiRico, let me inquire of you with regard to the issue of whether or not Mr. Lopez ever told Ms. Ajahi not to expect approval on the vacation request. Now, is it a position of Mr. Ajahi that he never said that?
It is unclear. Ms. Ajahi stated that in response to the request, he did not say yes or no. However, Mr. Lopez, in response to direct questions, stated that he did not tell Ms. Ajahi that she could not take the vacation. There are other reasons.
But is it his position from the deposition that he said she should not expect approval?
That was his testimony. However, there's also evidence to cast doubt on the vacation issue. First of all, as we stated, Mr. Lopez admitted he never told Ms. Ajahi that she could not take a vacation. Also, as the lower court even noted, at Aramark, silence in response to a vacation request meant approval. Also, Mr. Lopez did not say yes or no in connection with Ms. Ajahi's request, which the court must take as true for purposes of this appeal. Mr. Lopez did not even check unapproved on the vacation form. Also, when Ms. Ajahi returned to work on the 17th, as set forth in Mr. Kaminsky's memo, and she brought the doctor's notice requested, this further cast doubt and suspicion on whether or not this alleged unapproved vacation was the real reason that they fired her. If they were going to fire her for this alleged unapproved vacation, why bother asking her to bring a doctor's note? And Aramark admits that employees took vacations without having a signed request form and with less than 2 weeks' notice, as required by the policy. Additionally, as this court has noted, an employee with clear discriminatory animus, if the input information regarding an adverse employment decision comes from an employee with a discriminatory animus, that information, summary judgment is not proper. We have listed a number of reasons why this court cannot take as fact even Mr. Lopez's alleged comments. I mean, we also have the issue of Mr. Lopez's false testimony. Mr. Lopez clearly gave false testimony during his deposition regarding a material issue in this case, the customer complaint. as we stated in detail, he claims that a cashier named Monica Sanchez told him between August to October of 1998 that she received a customer complaint about Mr. Jahi. He was asked that twice in this deposition to confirm the date, the timing in which this happened. It later turns out that Ms. Monica Sanchez did not even begin to work for Aramark until December of 1999. Therefore, it would be impossible for her to relay an alleged customer complaint to Mr. Lopez. This is a material issue in this case because it's clearly one of the reasons that they claim that they let her go. And it's clear that Mr. Lopez simply gave false testimony to try to buttress Aramark's claims. Based on that, and also based on his clear discriminatory animus toward Mr. Jahi, summary judgment was simply not proper based on nothing other than Mr. Lopez's claim that he told her that she shouldn't expect that the case would be approved for 2 weeks on 2 days' notice. The simple fact is, a reasonable jury, as this court pointed out in prior v. Seifert Shaw, that we have reason to believe that a witness has given false testimony regarding a material issue in the case, the jury is free to disbelieve them on all other evidence, all other testimony in the case. Therefore, the jury is free to disbelieve Mr. Lopez's claims about what he told Mr. Jahi. That, coupled with the court's ruling, for example, which is stated in Alexander versus Wisconsin Department of Health, that summary judgment is improper where a plaintiff can show that an employee with discriminatory animus provided factual information or other input that may have affected the adverse employment action. Clearly, Mr. Kaminsky, in firing Mr. Jahi, only based this unapproved vacation information on the claim that Mr. Lopez said what he claims he said. Moving on, and I'd like to just stand on my brief on the race claim and the age claim, and
not
use
some time.
So thank you.
Very good, Mr. Burns.
May it please the court, I am James Burns, and I represent the appellee Aramark. It remains true, just as the lower court held, that there are no genuine issues of material fact to withstand summary judgment. I think, speaking to the termination, I think it's important to take a look at what Aramark knew, undisputedly, when it fired Ms. Ajayi. It knew that she had been the subject of more than one complaint that came not just from a suggestion box, but from Joe Mullen, who was the Harris Bank Assistant Vice President responsible for Aramark having the account at the bank. There is no evidence that Mr. Mullen ever came to Aramark or Kaminsky with several complaints about anyone other than Lola Ajayi. It knew that Ajayi had generated significantly more complaints to Mullen from bank employees than anyone else at Aramark. It knew Mullen had told Kaminsky that Mullen had personally witnessed Ms. Ajayi being rude to customers. There's no evidence Mr. Mullen ever told Mr. Kaminsky he had personally witnessed any other Aramark employee being rude. It knew that Mr. Mullen had forcefully expressed his concerns in writing. Mr. Kaminsky had asked Mr. Mullen to document his concerns, but Mr. Kaminsky never told Mr. Mullen what to say in that email. He didn't just say, oh, by the way, I've received a few complaints about Ms. Ajayi. He said he'd received complaints on several different occasions about her being rude. He stressed how visible she was and how her conduct was a reflection on Aramark's entire operation. No evidence he ever made a similar comment about any other employee. No evidence Mr. Mullen had ever expressed himself that way about Ms. Ajayi in the past. He directed Mr. Kaminsky to take appropriate measures to fix the problem immediately. Again, no evidence that Mr. Mullen had ever said anything like that about any other employee or that he had ever said it about Ms. Ajayi in the past. And Mr. Kaminsky could see that Mr. Mullen thought the problem was so serious that Mr. Mullen had copied his own boss on the email. What did Aramark know about the unapproved vacation? Well, as Judge Plunkett found, there's no doubt that Ms. Ajayi violated the vacation policy. She gave her vacation request to Mr. Lopez on May 1st, which was the last day she was going to be at work before she wanted to take a vacation. And in response to the request, the evidence is undisputed. Mr. Lopez said, "You can't come in 2 days before your vacation time and expect to have your vacation approved." And Ajayi admitted she didn't know whether her vacation had been approved.
Well, that is a kind of an ambiguous response.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. Let me, you know, if I have a rule in my house that my daughter can't watch television without my permission, and she comes to me and says, "Dad, can I watch TV?" And I say, "You know I'm not going to let you watch TV when you've got 2 hours of homework to do." You know, and she goes ahead and watches TV and then complains when I punish her and saying, "Well, you didn't tell me I couldn't."
But do we have a direct analogy there? Do we have a, does the record reflect that there's a history of approvals without
acquiescence?
Yeah.
The evidence on that is that the policy requires a written request 2 weeks advance and a supervisor's approval. The evidence also is that you didn't always have to make your request in writing,
right?
And you didn't always have to make it 2 weeks in advance. But the evidence is undisputed, as the district court found, that you always had to get approval of your supervisor, oral or written, before you left on vacation. And here, that clearly was not the case. He was telling her, "You can't expect to have it approved." It was not ambiguous. I don't think any reasonable person could walk out of Mr. Lopez's office thinking she had free rein to go take a vacation. So there's no doubt she violated the policy. Now, what is, given all of that, what does Ajayi claim shows that these were not the real reasons she was fired? Well, first she says nobody ever came to her earlier about Mr. Mullen complaining about her. Two things, I think, make that not a valid argument. First, the fact that an employee is not warned about performance problems in the past, this court has held more than once, does not create a genuine issue of pretext, especially whereas here the employer has no policy requiring it to warn employees. In addition, there is no evidence that the earlier complaints Mr. Mullen had brought to Aramark's attention compared to those he forcefully made in May of 2000. No evidence that he had ever described her as reflecting poorly on the entire operation. No evidence he'd ever directed them to fix it immediately. No evidence he'd ever made Kaminsky aware of the fact that Mullen was telling his own boss about the problem. The difference in the nature and emphasis of those complaints explains the difference in the response. Ms. Ajayi argues that Aramark had praised her relationships with customers in the past, and that suggests that its explanation of customer complaints was pretextual. The problem is the evidence shows that that alleged praise occurred in June of 1999 when she moved to the account at 311. That was almost a year before the complaints that got her fired. The mere fact that an employer once praises an employee in an area does not mean their later criticism is pretextual, especially when there's been a whole host of intervening events, as the court held in the Clay case we cite. I think it's different from the prior case the counsel referred to, where the supervisor was testifying that the employee was a poor performer, yet was confronted with evidence that during the same period he had been praising the employee's performance. Here we're talking about two different times. With respect to the, in any event, it's important to remember that Aramark had two reasons for terminating Ms. Ajayi: the customer complaints, also the vacation request. No doubt that she took an unapproved vacation. And when Mr. Commit, when she returned to work on May 17th, Mr. Kaminsky, honestly, I don't think knew where she had been. He knew that she had asked to take a vacation. He knew that that request had not been approved. He thought perhaps, based on sending the May 11 letter, he was giving her an opportunity to come in and explain perhaps there had been some emergency that had required her to be away from work. But when she returned, she said, "I was on vacation." Well, now he knew that she had not just disappeared from work for some emergency, which would have been forgiven by his May 11th letter. Now he knew she had flouted company policy by taking unapproved vacation. On top of that, he then reads Mullen's email stressing how seriously the customer viewed her conduct. He talks with Mullen. Mullen reminds him that Mullen has personally witnessed Ajayi engaging in such conduct. So Kaminsky and his boss conclude reasonably that her rude conduct was very important to their customer, keeping in mind that she was either the only employee about whom Mullen had ever made such vociferous complaint, or the one he'd complained about by far the most. And she blithely returned to work without any apology for having taken an unapproved vacation. Now, as for Mr. Kaminsky's comment on May 17, there's no doubt that the comment reflects that Mr. Kaminsky was not happy about being accused of illegal conduct. But there's no connection between that comment and her termination. Indeed, he hadn't even yet decided to terminate her at that point. His termination decision was reached after that, based on the facts he obtained after that meeting occurred. Counsel referred to the fact that the court ought not believe Mr. Lopez's version of events about the unapproved vacation because he gave, quote, false testimony, unquote, on a material fact. Well, the testimony actually is that Mr. Lopez said that another employee had complained about Ms. Ajayi in the past, and he named the employee and the date on which it occurred. And it turns out he was wrong either about who had complained or when the person had complained. But the fact is that Mr. Lopez's receipt of that complaint played absolutely no role in any subsequent decision about Ms. Ajayi's employment. It's not a material fact. That's why Pryor is not on point in this matter. One other important thing to think about with respect to the claim that Ajayi was fired either because of her race or because of her charge. She has not come forward with any evidence that a comparable, similarly situated employee was treated worse under the same circumstances.
Worse or better?
Better. Thank you, Your Honor. Ajayi was treated worse than any other employee. She compares herself to an employee named Lourdes Lopez. Well, Mr. Mullen complained about Ms. Ajayi, no doubt about that. There's also no doubt he never complained about Ms. Lopez. Now, Ms. Ajayi points to comment cards that were supposedly received that included complaints about Ms. Lopez. But there's no evidence in the record who the cards came from. There's no evidence that Mr. Mullen ever had any concern about them. There's no evidence what they supposedly said about Ms. Lopez or how that compared with what Mr. Mullen was very directly saying about Ms. Ajayi. There's no evidence the comments were anything but anonymous. So it's not reasonable to compare those to the personal direct concerns about Ms. Ajayi that Mr. Kaminsky was receiving from Mr. Mullen. She also refers to an anonymous memo Aramark received in late 99 from somebody who was complaining that Ms. Lopez and the other Hispanics in the workforce were speaking Spanish in front of customers. One anonymous complaint does not compare to a series of direct complaints from Mr. Mullen, especially when Mr. Mullen testified that he could not substantiate that the memo was accurate and that the memo didn't particularly concern him, both because it was anonymous and because he had some concerns about telling Spanish-speaking employees not to speak Spanish.
For how long a period of time are these complaints coming in about the appellant in this case?
The evidence was that the complaints had been coming in, I believe, for about a year and a half.
Had she ever been told about the complaints?
Her testimony is no, she was never told about the complaints.
Was there any testimony she'd been told about?
There is not. Again, I believe that the fact that the complaints were not brought to her attention earlier does not undercut the fact that the complaints were brought, were made, were seriously made, were forcefully made in a way they'd never been made before.
After she filed the EEOC complaint.
It was after she filed the complaint, but Aramark didn't control when Mr. Mullen came so forcefully forward. Aramark didn't control when Ms. Ajayi decided to not to follow her the vacation policy. The fact that those things occurred after she filed the charge as well, we couldn't control, but we did take action about both of those. And she had not violated the vacation policy in the past.
Did Mr. Lopez actually testify that when asked if he had denied her vacation request, he said no?
He testified
I'm referring at this point to the appellant's brief at page 21 where they cite to the record of Romero Lopez disposition, deposition.
His testimony was, I believe, I never said, quote, no, you can't go. But I did say, you can't expect your vacation to be approved. So the conversation never resulted in, yes, you may go, no, you may not. It was simply that he said, well, you can't come in expecting, your vacation needs to be approved, and you can't expect to have it approved coming in here like this.
But he said he never told her she couldn't.
He never came right out and said, no, you can't, but I think it's certainly reasonable if you are told you don't expect to get an approval in light of a policy that requires approval. This was not a silent shrug. It was, you can't expect to get approval. I don't think it's reasonable for him to think, for her to think, that she had the approval. With respect to Ms. Ajayi's discrimination claims, we will also stand on our briefs for all the reasons stated in there. Some are not raised in her charge. Many are not materially adverse. As I've explained, she wasn't treated worse than any similarly situated employee who was not black. And I believe for all those reasons, the district court correctly held that summary judgment was appropriate in this case, and we ask this court to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. Mr. DiRico? 3 minutes.
Thanks. There's one big problem with Aramark's claim about the size of Mr. Mullen's memo, or the size of the complaint in Mr. Mullen's memo, and that is, they suspended Ms. Ajayi and demoted her before they ever saw the memo. And, therefore, prior to seeing this memo, why would they treat his complaint like any other complaint? As we explained to this court, that memo was prepared at 4:35 p.m. on May 17th, about 4.5 hours after they had suspended her and given her the write-up, even though it referenced the memo, it didn't exist, given her, suspended her, and demoted her. So, what's their explanation for doing all that when they haven't even seen this incredibly, allegedly forceful memo? And they haven't explained at all why they ignored all of Mullen's prior complaints. And one very interesting point, Mullen claims that when they first opened the place, before Mr. Jahi knew him, which is suspect just because Mr. Kaminsky admitted he introduced Mr. Jahi to Mr. Mullen before they ever opened up. But Mr. Mullen claims that he felt that Ms. Ajayi was unfriendly to him at the beginning of the relationship, and he told Kaminsky. And there is nothing in the record to say that Kaminsky did anything about it. Here's a brand new relationship with a big client like Harris Bank, and you got the contact manager claiming that one of your employees has been unfriendly to him, and you do absolutely nothing about it. You don't tell her, you don't write her up, you don't do anything about it. And then, 2 weeks after you get some anonymous complaint, because remember, Mullen's complaints were anonymous too. He was only the messenger. Mullen could not name one person who complained to him, not one single person. And so his complaint was as anonymous as the comment cards and as the memo. Mullen, and with respect to the customer, the alleged cashier, Monica Sanchez's complaint, isn't it for the jury to decide whether Mr. Lopez was giving false testimony or making a mistake. Isn't that for the jury to decide? And if the jury determines that Mr. Lopez did, in fact, give false testimony, they are free to disbelieve him with respect to his response on the vacation request. Even putting aside his evident discriminatory animus that precludes summary judgment, since they're relying on solely that. And it's very interesting to note that Kaminsky claimed that when he discussed the vacation situation with Mr. Lopez, Mr. Lopez told him that he did tell Mr. Jahi that the vacation was denied. So it's ironic and interesting and disturbing that when asked in his deposition under oath, did you tell Ms. Ajayi that she could not take the vacation, he said no. As this court has noted numerous times.
You make a
comment,
Rick. I just want to tell you your time has expired.
Credibility decisions are for the jury. Who to believe in this case and who not to believe, it's for the jury. And I submit to this court that the lower court decision should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rico. Thank you, Mr. Burns. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.